The Fan on Demand.
From the MLB Winter Meetings in Nashville, it's the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Dirk Hayhurst on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We are back at the Opryland Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee, the site of baseball's winter meetings. It is the Jeff Blair Show with co-host Dirk Hayhurst to my left. Sorry, that's an awful joke. Jeff Idelson is the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. He's the president of Cooperstown. That's got to sound pretty good. The people just introduce you as, this is the guy who's the president of Cooperstown. It's like your own little fiefdom.
That was the first. Oh, okay. I don't think I've ever heard
Never
that.
Been the president of Cooperstown.
Do you pick up chicks with that? Do you walk around and drop that on, you see a cute girl and you're like, yo, I'm the president of Cooperstown.
And they say, oh, football hall of fame? That's no, it's Canton, sweetheart.
Yeah, Canton's beautiful this time of the year. This is, I would guess, well, as someone who's a Hall of Fame voter, I wouldn't say it's the ballot that I've been kind of worried about, but it's certainly the most interesting ballot I've had to cast this year, Jeff. I mean, obviously, we know that we got Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa and Roger Clemens on it, and that means that we're going to have to stare the issues of steroids and baseball straight in the face. A couple of things I wanted to ask you about. That's the loudest coffee grinder in the history.
I thought somebody was getting a cavity filled.
Yeah. Wow. Anyhow, sounds like they're cutting grass over there. A couple of people have made this point to me in recent weeks as we've talked about the Hall of Fame. And I wanted to ask you, and part of their question is, look, this is such an issue for everybody. Why doesn't the Hall of Fame come up with a clear-cut position, a clear-cut set of principles, not principles, a clear-cut set of rules on how you vote for these guys?
Well, that's a good question, Jeff. And what's important to know is that the dialogue we have with BBWAA as a membership group and the individuals is an open one. And at every turn that we've asked the BBWAA as an organization if they're comfortable with the rules as they are, the answer is yes, we don't need any more clarification. Now, if you were to make the rules more definitive, then we would be taking decision-making out of your hands. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, we feel that the BBWAA has done a really good job in electing candidates who belong in Cooperstown. I think you'd have a hard time walking through our halls and finding anyone in there that you elected that doesn't belong. And because of that long tenure of great thought, consideration, and execution of the ballots, we're comfortable with the rules, and we are told at every step that you are too.
I know from attending BBWA meetings that any time it does come up, there is. It's like anything else, I guess, Jeff. You want. I've always argued you have to. I'm not a fan of inclusive halls of fame, and what I mean by that is, I want to be able to walk through the Hall of Fame, and like you said, I don't want to look at a guy and go, really?
Yeah.
You know, he's here. I'd rather go through and regardless of a person's warts, their background, whatever, I'm of the opinion that baseball fans and people who visit Cooperstown, and if you ever get a chance to do it, to go through Cooperstown, I think you'll see what I mean. The number of times you go through it, Jeff, and you see parents with their kids, they're standing in front of the plaque of Ty Cobb, and parents are explaining to their kids, hey, this guy was a great player, but, you know, the time he played, there was a lot of allegations of racism. I mean, baseball fans are smart enough that they can put that stuff in context for the next generation.
Well, right. I have to agree with you there. You know, when I think about history in its totality, I don't think about going back and polishing up the parts that we're not proud of. I don't think that works for history as a whole, and I don't think it works for the history of baseball, and I see the Hall of Fame as a canon of the history of baseball as it's preserved throughout the many stages that it went through. And I think that, you know, the 1800 era and even in the steroid era has a place in that canon of history.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head, Dirk. That's what we are. We're a history museum, and we look at the ballot, we look at what goes on the field, we look at what goes on in society with baseball's relationship to it through the prism of history. We're there to document, not to tell people how to think or to revise anything.
Jeff Idelson is the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. I know we talked a little bit about this off-air, Jeff, but the I think what you're going to see happen this year with this ballot, I mean, I'm going to vote for Bonds. I'm going to vote for Clemens. But I think you're going to see a lot of people not vote for these guys, almost as a protest non-vote. Do you have an issue with that? One of the things to me is always the flaw that I see as a voter is the idea that you're not a Hall of Famer in your first year, but you're a Hall of Famer in your second year. I'm going to punish you. I don't think you belong in, as a first ballot Hall of Famer. Is that an issue for you guys?
Well, I think it's an issue for the BBWAA because, you know, there's been a point in history where there were a number of players who fell off the ballot after one try because there were so many in the BBWA who said, guy's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. Then the BBWA came back to us and they said, would you put Ted Simmons back on the ballot? Would you put Ron Santo back on the ballot? Will you put Ken Boyer back on the ballot? And the question is, well, why did they fall off the ballot? It's like, well, we didn't vote for him. So it's a little contradictory, I think.
I mean, it is. Look, it's fundamentally, it's a, and I had this discussion with Joe Carter, who fell off the ballot. There's a certain amount of discomfort when you're essentially saying to a player, you know what, you had a great career, but you're not good enough to be, you know, thanks for coming. It's more or less a thanks for coming thing. But, I mean, I wouldn't call it a flaw in the process. I think there's some characteristics of this process that, frankly, Jeff, that are good for you guys because it makes for a healthy debate. It makes for a lot of debate. I don't know. I mean, I know you've been involved in the Hall for a while. It seems to me that more and more we're getting discussion about the Hall almost year-round, which is good.
Absolutely. We feel the discussion is healthy. I mean, at the end of the day, as we've been talking about, Jeff, is you want to make sure that the guys that you elect belong there, and there's a great responsibility that goes with that. But it also underscores just how difficult it is to make it into the Hall of Fame. You know, 1%, 1 out of 100, whoever wear a Major League uniform, get there. That's how hard it is to get. So, you know, there's only 300 Hall of Famers. There's only 208 who are players out of 18,000 who have ever worn a Major League uniform.
So going into this, now that there's all this talk about steroid use and its ramifications for the Hall of Fame and what that means, and then there's people taking the stance that we're not going to vote for them to punish them, do you feel like as a representative of the Hall of Fame, if you come down on this, if you have a stance on this at all, if you say, whoa, we shouldn't punish, or if you say anything at all that could be construed one way or the other, you're somehow affecting what goes in there? I mean, it's got to be a tough place for you to maintain neutrality on, I would imagine.
I don't think so, you know, because you want the process to be fair and democratic for everybody who has to cast a ballot. And, you know, at the end of the day, as we started this conversation, we're comfortable with the rules as they are. They're pretty simple. They're pretty self-explanatory. There is some subjectivity to them. But at the end of the day, the more and more you tell somebody how to vote, the less and less meaning it has to cast your vote.
Even if you are asking people to vote objectively, even if you're saying, I mean, that in a way is, I hate to debate on the nature of helping people vote or the, you know, the definition of voting. But, you know, if it's an historical institution that's role is to play this preservation of the canon of baseball, then there would be some impetus on you, I would think, to say, please vote objectively. Don't be swayed by this or that. Think of the big picture. But even saying that in some way, I feel like would be persuasive to an agenda. So it's going to be tough.
Well, it depends on your definition of objectivity when it comes to the subject matter. The great thing is that we're three entities under one roof in Cooperstown. So the entire history of the game is there. There's not any one player that's bigger than the game. And at the end of the day, the Hall of Fame is just a third of what we do. The entire history of the game, good and bad, is rolled out. And if there are players that end up not making it on the Hall of Fame ballot, into Cooperstown, it doesn't mean they'll be ignored in history. Right. Point in case is Pete Rose, where there's 22 of his artifacts on display.
Yeah, that is. I was going to. We're joined by Jeff Idelson, president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. The one thing that I was going to point out is it's not just the Hall of Fame. It is a museum, and you're right. There are artifacts from players who are not in the Hall of Fame that are on display. Do you foresee a time, Jeff, where there will be? I mean, the relationship between the Hall of Fame and the BBWA has been, I think it's been really good. Do you foresee a time where there will be a thinning down of, or a slimming down of the voting pool, maybe a change to allow players, club broadcasters to come in to play here? Or is it, do you think it'll always be baseball writers doing the voting?
I don't know. Always is a very long time, so it's hard to say. I'd say in the foreseeable future, our board of directors is very comfortable with the way the voting has gone. There is an objectivity to it. People say, well, the writers hold grudges. You know, guys that were bad, they don't, guys that they didn't get along with, they won't vote for. And you look at Steve Carlton and Eddie Murray as two examples of guys going in on the first ballot. So I don't think there's any truth to that. You'd love to have guys that are broadcasters, long tenured, who have probably seen more baseball than a lot of writers be involved in the process. We do involve them in our veterans type of ballots, but, you know, there's the perception thereof too, since most of them are employed by ball clubs, that there could be a conflict of interest. So, you know, I think at this point we're happy with the way the rules are and the voting body is constructed.
Is there are there any, I don't know how often you get asked this, are there many capital projects ahead for the Hall of Fame? In terms of, I mean, I love it as it is, frankly. As I said, anybody who's been down there, it's just great. But are there capital projects you're looking at?
Not capital. We just finished a massive renovation in the last half decade, which basically redid the entire museum. It's in great shape, 50,000 square feet. I don't know how many meters that is in Canada, but 50, it's a lot of meters. 50,000 square feet of exhibit space and state of the art now with technology integrated throughout. Wonderful, compelling exhibits. We're opening one up on Scouts next spring, which will be our newest foray. And gearing really towards the museum turning 75 in 2 years and looking at a lot of programs outside of Cooperstown as well.
How do you keep it quaint yet up to date? That, to me, is the beauty of Cooperstown. I always use the word quaint, but when you go there, it's also up to date.
Relationship we have with a lot of our sponsors and partners who allow us to, you know, put exhibits into more contemporary state for the youngsters who want to, you know, follow with their iPad as they're walking through the museum or engage in scavenger hunts. And the village itself will always be quaint. 1,800 residents. Mm-hmm. My high school is bigger than Cooperstown, which is kind of crazy. But the town itself is quaint. One stoplight. You still have that red brick building recessed right in the middle of town on Main Street. But once you open those doors, it's a whole new world.
Jeff, I appreciate you joining us. Jeff Idelson is the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And as I say every time I talk about the Hall of Fame, don't just talk about it. Go down and see it. Believe me, it is a trip worth taking. And good luck finding a parking spot. Actually, I was going to say, you know what? I was surprised at how easy it was to find a parking spot down there when I was there for the Robbie Alomar thing.
Yeah, well, you know, it works out. People let visitors park on their lawns and you know, back of their house, and everybody's kind of familiar and has a good time, and it's baseball all the time.
Yeah, no, it's really, like I said, it's a remarkable facility, and we appreciate you joining us.
Thanks
so much.
Jeff. Thanks, Dirk.
Thank you.
Jeff Idelson's the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. When we come back, we're going to take your calls and get your thoughts. Very simple question. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, do you consider them Hall of Famers? That ahead in the Jeff Blair Show. Live from Cooperstown. Live from Nashville on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now back to the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Dirk Hayhurst. Live from the MLB Winter Meetings in Nashville on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show, live from baseball's winter meetings in Nashville, Tennessee, at the lovely Opryland Hotel. Dirk Hayhurst, my co-host all week. Interesting discussion, I thought, Dirk, with Jeff Idelson, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame. And Jeff was making the point off air that, in fact, the Hall of Fame did, at one point, give voters a clear guideline for a player. That was Pete Rose. They made it very clear to the writers that you could not vote for Pete Rose because he was ineligible. Of course, several writers wrote in Pete Rose in their ballot, and Jeff was right. He said, you know, we got crucified for that, and as a result, we're certainly not going to run around and say, hey, you can't vote for this guy because his name was connected with steroids. I mean, I look at this ballot, and Dirk, I'm one of these people that I pride myself on being on two things. One, I don't like to overthink my ballot because I think if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. Two, I don't like to vote for a lot of people in my ballot because that turns it into the Hockey Hall of Fame where everybody and their dog gets in as long as they played for the Leafs or played 6 years in the NHL. But I look at this ballot. I always vote for Mark McGwire in principle. I vote for Tim Raines because I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I've got to vote for Mike Piazza, best catcher I've seen. And Bonds and Clemens, I mean, I've got to vote for him.
I'm voting for them too.
You have to.
We have. No, they have never tested positive. Mike, am I wrong on this?
No, it's. I mean, we've made that point. It's, and I was talking to Jeff about this as well, Dirk. I get emails from people. Well, wait a minute. You're saying that you're going to vote for Mike Piazza? He was a steroid guy. I don't believe he was ever tested positive. I don't believe he showed up in the Mitchell report. Of course, neither did Sammy Sosa, which people tend to forget. It's such a complicated issue. But from where I stand, I think the good thing about this ballot is we're going to be forced to confront the issue head on. And I think we're going to be forced to really come clear in our own minds.
I think what we're going to see is people are going to have to understand that the court of social justice and presumed guilt needs to be debunked. Because there are a lot of players that have this reputation for being cheaters who have technically not failed any of the major league drug testing policies to become legitimate cheaters. And if that's the case, then, according to the world of baseball and the rules that it's set, you should be able to cast a vote for these players and put them in the Hall of Fame. Now, we talked to Jeff. He sat there and he told us that this represents a canon of history, baseball in its fullness. And that means racism when baseball started. It means all of the dirty history and the backhanded GM dealings and the strike, all of that stuff, all the ugly stuff. You cannot revise history at this point. You have to put stuff in because it represents it as fullness. These players were great players. If they haven't been, the rules have changed now.
Mm-hmm.
Could these same players get away with it now? Maybe not. But the fact is they did then. They weren't guilty. You cannot say you do not belong in the Hall of Fame because of some presumed social law breaking. So I'm for it. I'm for putting these players in. I support that.
Yeah, my sense is that if, as I look at it right now, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens will be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think they're going to get in the first ballot, which is an entirely different issue. But I think there'll be enough people that'll look at it as their chance to quote unquote punish these guys. 416-870-0590 *590 1-888-666-0590. Very simple question for you to consider this morning: Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, would you vote for them in the Hall of Fame? John in Toronto, you're our leadoff hitter on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, how are you? Well, I would, and my biggest problem with the baseball, with the writers, are that they're a bunch of immature babies. And the fact is, I'm sorry to say, but if Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens would have had the personality or the niceness of a Roy Halladay, then they would have gotten in. But because the writers have a grudge against them, the way they acted, I'm sorry to say, the Baseball Hall of Fame is not a Hall of Fame for people that behave themselves nicely. It's for people that hit home runs. And it will hit and do all of that. And I'm sorry to say, half the players are in there right now have been taking those drugs when they played.
So for there's no doubt that there are guys in there using it. There's no doubt.
And just the last point is that I'm sorry to say, these drugs didn't make them into Hall of Famers. It's possible that their numbers are a little more than they would have been. But I'm sorry, it doesn't make a person hit, instead of hitting 20 home runs, it's 60 home runs. It just doesn't work like that.
Well, you know, and here's the other thing to keep in mind. I mean, I get grilled for this all the time because I was completely honest, and I'm always completely honest with my Hall of Fame vote. I had what I considered to be a very a run-in with Gary Carter that I considered him to have really insulted me personally and questioned my credibility, accused me of intentionally misquoting him. And I told people, you know, I was so pissed off about that I didn't vote for him in the Hall of Fame. And it's funny, Mike Farber, a friend of mine who writes for Sports Illustrated, he was making the point that, you know, the one thing about the Hall of Fame is there are people who are going to view it as their chance to get back at somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not right. It's immature. It's petulant. But there are people who are going to use it that way. The only thing I would say is Eddie Murray, first class jerk to most writers. First ballot Hall of Famer. I think generally the writers do a pretty good job overlooking that part of it. Steroids, though, I guess, Dirk, part of the issue with steroids is for a lot of writers, there's a sense of, it's not betrayal, but a sense of, I followed the game, I covered the game, I feel like these guys, by me not digging deeper into the whole issue of steroids, I feel that these guys have somehow impugned my dignity, you know? And I don't feel that way, because I make the point to people, I asked guys like F.P. Santangelo to their face, did you ever use steroids? No. Boom. Found in the Mitchell Report. David Segee, another guy, I covered David Segee for a long time, had a real good relationship with him. I asked him several times. No. And the thing is, if you're not there, you know, I'm not going to write a story saying David Segee denied being on steroids, but you know what? He's on steroids. You can't do that. And people need to remember, Dirk, this became public because of an IRS investigation in the Balkans. It was not somebody saying that somebody hitting this mother load of information on steroids. It was a tax evasion question that spun off into a wider story.
Right. This wasn't clever investigative reporting.
No. You know,
or it wasn't hit microphones or anything. This was, yeah, this was for another reason, this was
entirely
uncovered.
Yeah.
Well, there's two things here. One, I don't think that the Baseball Hall of Fame is the great human being Hall of Fame. There are some savages and losers and just deplorable humanity in that Hall of Fame as people. But they're there because they did what well? They played baseball well. I get that. But on the other side, I understand why some writers feel like they have to be the white knight that keeps this kind of purity and nobility in the game because of what it represents to humanity and our culture, and it needs to be policed, and you just can't let these ruffians in there contaminate it with their horrible practices. What does it say about the rest of us? Well, I'm sorry, but you cannot go back and revise it. It has to be represented fairly, and you have to understand that as a writer.
As a guy who played in the game, you faced guys who are on steroids. Did you feel that they cheated?
As far as trying to get into the... Okay, so this is very difficult for me to answer.
And it's a different question.
Question, but it's hard for me to answer. You know, I had no delusions of ever making it into the Hall of Fame myself, so, you know, that was never an issue for me. For most of it, it's just trying to get paid.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to get as much money as they can. I'm sorry. Sorry, listeners. I'm sorry. The player is not concerned about how he affects your daughter or son as a role model when he's thinking about his children and how he's going to feed them or getting set for life or all the money that's involved. Mm-hmm. It does come down to that. There is a market that will pay winners in baseball. And if you can cheat to make that career go longer and those paychecks get bigger and you think you're not going to get caught, the end justifies the means for a lot of players. And you know what? There's really no teeth in the policy. I mean, you're going to get bit for 50 games, but then someone's still going to sign you.
Hello, Melky Cabrera.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, it really is a great point. I mean, I used to, and I talked to a guy. I can remember talking to Felipe Alou about, you know, guys when he played. Guys were always on amphetamines. Guys have always looked to get an edge. And right now there are guys
doing stuff. And they are doing stuff that they're doing testosterone creams that are in and out of your system in 24 hours. They are hopped up on energy drinks. I mean, there's more. People are consuming more caffeine and uppers that are quote-unquote legal now than they did when they were taking amphetamines. I mean, they're hurting themselves more crushing a six-pack of Red Bull before a game starts to get through.
Kind of like you
do before every show. But guys that are addicted to painkillers, guys that don't need Adderall that are on Adderall. People will always find an edge, whether it's technically legal right now or not legal. It's such a gray line.
And the important thing is, and I keep pointing this out to people, it's not just athletes. Everybody in society does that. I mean, you take pills to get erections.
You're cheating
old age. Clifton in Etobicoke, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How are you, my friend?
I'm well, buddy. Now, here's what
you should be down here, Clifton. You'd have fun in this lobby.
Oh, yeah. Well, buddy, I've been listening to you since yesterday, and I can see how much fun you're having there. But now, if Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, if these guys aren't Hall of Famers, I don't know who is. Now, Jeff, Barry Bonds, towards the end of his career, when this guy was the best hitter in baseball, bar none. Now, he was getting like one pitch a game to hit, and he would jerk it out of the park. Now, to me, this guy, I mean, ask Buck Showalter if Barry Bonds is a Hall of Famer. I don't. You remember that game where he walked Barry Bonds as a go-ahead run?
Buck Rogers, when he managed the Montreal Expos, used to walk Barry Bonds to load the bases all the time.
Yeah. So, now, to me, a Hall of Famer has to be, you know, like, of that description. A guy who, like, everybody remembers. Like, during his time when he played, like Robbie Alomar, you know, Roger Clemens, the most dangerous right-handed pitcher that I've ever seen. Now, Mark, I've only been watching baseball since around 1982.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I'm concerned, Roger Clemens, if there was one game to pitch, that would be the guy for me. So if these two guys are not Hall of Famers, man, now, I don't know who is.
You know, Clifton, and I mean, I've got to say, I've covered baseball since 89. There was, and there is, there has been no player in that time who teams were scared of as much as Barry Bonds. It was a case when he was with the Pirates. It was a case when he was with the Giants. I mean, I just saw managers do stuff to avoid having Barry Bonds beat them that you wouldn't do with anybody else. You just wouldn't.
You know, what's funny is that Barry Bonds would come up to conversations with pitchers, and we would say, man, I don't want to be the guy who gives up whatever, but I'm kind of okay with it because you know he's going to break the record. At least I'll be in the record books as one of his victims.
Yeah.
Like, you were okay with it at that point because you knew.
Did you face him?
No.
Bonds?
No, thank goodness.
Okay,
no.
I thought maybe
that
you would have.
Brutal. I would have given up. Like,
I was just 20. Wondering what I was going to ask. What would he be like to. Let me ask you this. I got a minute bit left before we get Jonah Caring here. Who was the best hitter you faced?
The best hitter I faced was probably Evan Longoria. I faced Evan Longoria when he was hot, when he was doing real well. And I struck him out, thank you. Change up, down, and in. If any of the other pitchers are out there listening, spread this around winter meetings. Evan Longoria, sucker for the change up, down, and in. Can't lay off it. Swings through it, man. Just wants to crush it. That's my secret.
That's
the only
secret.
Thing I ever did right. That's the only thing I ever did right.
That's great. Let's. Do we have time to squeeze Mark in? Mark him in? No, we don't, actually, unfortunately. I rambled on too long. Jonah Carey. One of the very best from Grantland.com will join us. We'll continue our Hall of Fame discussion with Jonah Carey. This is the Jeff Blair Show with co-host Dirk Hayhurst. We are live on location at baseball's winter meetings in Nashville, Tennessee.
Sportsnet. Always on the web, on TV, on your mobile device, on display at Sportsnet Magazine, and on the radio, Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Now back to the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Dirk Hayhurst, live from the MLB Winter Meetings in Nashville on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Yeah, that's true. We are back at the lovely Opryland Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a place you come to hate Christmas. This is the Jeff Blair Show. It is the site of the winter meetings. It is true. It's a place you come to hate Christmas. Dirk Hayhurst, my co-host all week. Why are you waving? There's no camera.
I just felt like I should do it. I was waving at Jonah.
Okay. And Jonah Carey. Jonah Carey from Grantland.com. Jonah, is your mic working?
I think my mic is working. I think we're referring to Dirk's mic.
It's perfect. There we go. We have... is Dirk, you okay now?
Great.
I can't hear your mic. Dirk's mic isn't working. We'll take care of it. Don't worry. We'll take care of it. Jonah Carey from Grantland joins us. So we had Jeff Idelson here. We had our Hall of Fame discussion.
Oh, boy.
You know, I came out and admitted that I'm voting for Bonds and Clemens.
Good
and
for you.
Piazza. And I'm going to... Man, I just don't like putting all these people on my ballot. But I got to... I've been, like, banging the drum for Mark McGwire. I'm going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy whose candidacy is very close to your heart and mine, Tim Raines. I'm going to ask you, what percentage do you think he gets this year?
It's an interesting debate because
where do the votes go? They could be diverted one way or the other. There are people that have come out against Bonds and Clemens and those guys. So does that mean that they fill those spots with Reigns or, I don't know, Alan Trammell, who actually I think is deserving too, people like that? It's tough to say. Or is it the case that there are so many deserving candidates? And a silly rule, by the way, where you can only vote for 10. To me, there's about 12 or pretty good this year, that it puts you in a little bit of a bind. So my guess, it's a cop-out guess, but I think Reigns will probably be close to what he was last year, near 50%. I'd love if he can get over, because there's a history with the Hall of Fame. Once you get over 50, which is silly because the candidate should only be as good as the candidate is, but for whatever reason, it gets people's attention.
Yeah, I think one of the things we're finding is that there's a... And I've spoken to Reigns about this. People do tend to reevaluate. The good thing I would say about the whole steroid issue, is it's caused people to reevaluate the careers of people like Tim Reigns and look back at it and go, wow. I mean, you can never say that a guy never, ever, ever did anything. Yeah. But when you look at some of the numbers that guy put up, you reevaluate things. And that whole generation of players, Jonah, for me, the guys in the late 70s and 80s, they've been screwed.
Well, they have. There's a lot of sub angle. I mean, we could talk Hall of Fame all day. One of the things that always gets me with the steroid stuff is amphetamines are a performance enhancer too. Mm-hmm. Hank Aaron admitted to taking amphetamines. Mike Schmidt, Willie Mays was known as like the slinger of amphetamines. I don't think they're bad guys. I think they should be in the Hall of Fame. I just think that suddenly voters are medical doctors and they can make a determination on, oh, clearly steroids helped this guy this much and this didn't help, and so I'm going to make a determination based on that. It's silly. But yeah, Reigns had a diverse set of skills. It's funny, I think that's worked against him to some extent. If he had given up 400 walks for infield singles, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. He's reached base more times in his career than Tony Gwynn. He's got more than 800 steals. The other four guys with more than 800 steals are all in the Hall of Fame. I got to be honest with you, I think it's an obvious candidacy. It sort of boggles the mind. I don't know if it's because of the cocaine use and people are 30 years later moralizing about it, or because of the lack of round numbers, or because he played in Montreal. I don't know what it is. It just kind of drives me a little bit batty, aside from the fact that he was a favorite of mine. I love the Expos. Objectively, I think Tim Raines should be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay, so I have to ask about the echo chamber effect that's going on here. We talk about this. There seems to be a separation between the actual product of the player and how good they are and if they should get in the Hall of Fame, and then this tidal wave of social perception, hate, villainization of these players because they did steroids, you know, and it's become this like, I mean, it's like,
you did that again.
Steroids.
That's, yeah, good. So, that's good radio.
Yeah, thank you. It's bold radio. Yeah. You know, you see people get this label on them, this moniker of steroid, and it's like, you have guys that like, they cheated. Oh, he did an amphetamine. How cute. He did steroids. I'm like, he killed a family. Did you hear about that? Like, it is that big. The difference is that. So there's got to be a stigma on certain things, you know, that like, I don't understand how steroids can be so horrendously terrible when cheating is supposed to be cheating across the board. And there's other cheaters in the Hall of Fame.
The Hall of Fame is voted on by the Baseball Writers Association of America. And there are certain members of the group who take it as and I'm not criticizing it, they take it as a very strong responsibility, and they're basically the moral arbiters of the Hall of Fame, and they have to make determinations and who's in and who's out. And when you introduce that kind of subjectivity, what can happen is feelings can get in the way. So, for example, let's say you're of the older generation, you covered guys who were, maybe it was pre-steroids or the steroids weren't common, but amphetamines were. Well, amphetamines were like M&Ms on the clubhouse table. Right. Everybody knew about it. Right. It was very obvious. But for steroids, people were not reporting this stuff. So maybe it's a case, I don't think people, there's nothing worse to a human being than being made the fool. And I think that there are a lot of cases where people feel like, oh, you made me look like a stupid idiot. I'm going to get back at you by doing this thing. Yeah. I honestly think that's in play. I'm not saying that vindictively.
No,
I just think that's the case. It's human nature.
I made the point with, we're joined by Jonah Carey and Dirk Hayhurst. I made the point to Dirk in the last segment that absolutely, I think that has a huge, huge role to play in this. And I was telling Dirk, I mean, I asked guys like F.P. Santangelo, David Segui to their face, did you guys ever use steroids? No, never. I wouldn't do that. And, you know, now, of course, F.P.'s admitted it. But the point is, and I keep telling people, absent seeing these guys injecting each other in the ass with steroids, as a writer, I'm not going to write a story saying, you know, F.P. Santangelo is suspected of using steroids. He says he isn't, but he's suspected. You just can't do that.
So I have to ask then, Jonah, if we were in a situation where it wasn't this cloak and dagger, or cloak and syringe, should I say, if it was a situation where steroids were just out on the table in the clubhouse and everybody knew about it or whatever, it was just happening and, you know, the buddy system didn't report about it. And now it's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, guys did steroids. If there wasn't so much behind-the-scenes cover-up, no, I didn't, lying to you about it, do you think the stigma would be so high? Or do you think it's because people are easily connecting the quantifiable outcome of steroids, unlike, you know, who's to say how many people pitched better, ran better, were more aware because of a PED? But people think, oh, well, steroids, obviously, that accounts to every success he's ever had was steroid-related, period.
It certainly has propelled Manny Alexander to a Hall of Fame-level career, so there, and Alex Sanchez, no doubt about that. But it's the kind of situation where I think both of those things are right. If it was out in the open, I think it would diminish the stigma a little bit. But sure, I think that people, again, non-doctors, have this perception of steroids making you into a superhuman. Sometimes that's the case, sometimes not. There are all kinds of other things. There's a great Baseball Prospectus did a follow-up to Baseball Between the Numbers, which was the book that I participated in, and a guy named Jay Jaffe wrote this chapter about the steroids era, and it was a great chapter. And he said, let's look at everything else that happened in that era. Ballparks shrank. People were sawing the bats. You have these tiny little handles, and you have this whipsaw effect. Possibly the balls were juiced. I'm not saying that these are the primary reasons. I'm saying a lot of things happened between 1992 and 2000 and whatever, 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. So it's very tough to parse one thing from the other. And that's where I think that I just have a problem with it. And I think Jeff brought up a good point. He said, okay, well, you know, F.P. Santangelo, if he didn't tell me and I didn't see him, I couldn't report it. Fine, that's a reasonable standard of journalism and a reasonable standard of reporting or whatever. People have decided that Jeff Bagwell shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Jeff Bagwell hasn't been linked to anything except in people's minds. There's been no Mitchell report. There's been no nothing. Jeff Bagwell's case, the case against Jeff Bagwell is he was muscular and he played the 1990s. That's not a case. That's not a thing.
And my concern, and I hope it doesn't happen, but I'll be interested in seeing how many votes Mike Piazza ends up getting. He's a slam dunk first ballot.
He's the best offensive catcher in the history of baseball, including Johnny Bench.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I think he'll get in, but 90%, there are going to be people who are going to withhold votes from him because they suspect him, because he had acne in his back.
Right.
They are. You know there are people who are going to look at that.
But, you know, just to defend that, yeah. Not that I have acne on my back. I'm just saying, as the catcher, you have those straps that go back there, yes. And a lot of catchers have that. So if we're going to use that as the...
I've never heard that before. That's
George
really
Gutierrez,
interesting.
George Gutierrez, who I played with.
Really?
Because you can't breathe through that star-like leather strap patch back there. It's about a hand size. The straps go around, and they rub, and they're tight. And so the skin gets irritated there, and as you sweat, and it doesn't breathe as easily, a lot of catchers end up getting...
That is super interesting. Yeah. I've never heard that before, and I appreciate that perspective. Yeah. I did not know that.
Every catcher in the 1990s is now safe for the Hall of Fame.
That's amazing. Mike Fitzgerald, you're totally in the Hall of Fame.
Darren Fletcher, someplace Darren Fletcher's smiling.
Yeah, an angel just got its wings or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Effect.
We're joined by Jonah Carey of Grantland.com. Dirk Hayhurst, of course, my co-host. All week long. Shifting focus to the winter meetings a bit, Jonah, what's the storyline out there right now that you're most interested in as this thing kind of comes to its conclusion in the next couple of days?
I think Josh Hamilton's going to the Baltimore Orioles. I think that it makes too much sense. The only reason it wouldn't happen is if Peter Angelos has decided that the hundreds of millions of dollars of profits that he makes, he doesn't want to cut into that one iota, because that is a perfect fit. Their left fielders last year were Lou Ford and Nate McClouth. Mm. They made the playoffs last year, but there's, you know, whether you're a stat head or not, I think it's acknowledged maybe they played over their heads. They were 29-9 in one-run games. It's a given there's going to be some regression to the mean. How do you prevent against regression? You go get a big guy who hits 40 home runs. That's a really good way to do it. There's a big hole. There's a big need. They're a highly profitable team, and they're not the bloated payroll team that they were in the 90s in those days when they were trying to capture their glory. It's such an obvious fit to me. I think that should happen, and I'm going out on a limb, I guess, but I'm saying I think it will happen. I think that's going to be the surprise of either the winter meetings or soon after Josh Hamilton goes to Baltimore.
I wonder if what happened with Alex, the announcement about Alex Rodriguez yesterday, hasn't changed things a little bit for teams like the Orioles. I mean, the Jays have made their big move, but clearly if you're the Orioles, you've got to look at this and go, all right, that window of opportunity. And Alex Rodriguez isn't the player he was 5 years ago. But suddenly you've got a Yankees team that's missing a third of its starting lineup.
Swisher, they don't have a catcher.
Yeah. Who knows Jeter. Who knows how effective he's going to be?
Although we know he's not fat based on the picture with Harold Reynolds
that's
that
right.
MLB Network posted.
Thank goodness.
That's the silliest scandal of all time.
You know, I was trying to tell someone the other day. I looked at the picture of Jeter, and I said, you know what he looks like? He looks to me like a guy who got out of bed about 10 minutes ago and said, I'm going to go down and get a coffee, threw an old shirt on, had some, didn't really care how he looked.
We should all be so fat as Derek Jeter.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't mind having Derek Jeter's lifestyle. But, I just think that maybe we're overthinking this, but I really believe that what happened yesterday with Alex Rodriguez has changed the dynamic in the American League East even more.
I think it has, and the big thing to me, and I've reported it every time I've talked about the Yankees, is this whole obsession with getting under the luxury tax for 2014.
Which is ludicrous.
It is and it isn't. Every major league team, and I'll say this on every show that I ever go on, is profitable. They are lying bastards if they say that they're not. They all make money. Some of them make a ton of money, including the Yankees. The Yankees want to get under $189 million for 2014. A great article by Jason Stark at ESPN.com explains everything about that situation. It basically means the Yankees pocket like an extra $50 million, something to that effect that year. That's huge. Even if you're profitable, I don't care. You know, if you're Apple and you're making huge profits, I can get another huge percent. I'm going to do it. And so it puts them in a situation where the old Yankees would say, let's do everything in the world to get Chase Headley. Now, maybe Headley's untouchable, I don't know, but you would go after somebody. Now they're in a position where they're really trying to do it on the cheap. And so they got Carota and Pettit and Rivera on one-year deals, fine, gets under the luxury tax for 14, but they're stuck at third base. They're not players for, let's say, Michael Bourne, who'd be a good fit in that team. I mean, with Granderson and Gardner to be the best defensive outfielder in baseball, but they're not going to do that. For catcher, they're not going to go out and make a big splash. Absolutely, that division is open for Toronto, for Baltimore. And I'll tell you, the team that has the most bullets still to fire is the Tampa Bay Rays. They have 7,000 good starting pitchers, and everybody wants one right now.
Yeah, and people, as I had someone tell me the other day in the lobby, one thing Tampa Bay, not only do they have pitching, they've got the type of pitching that people will overpay for. I mean, Tampa Bay pitching is like Dodgers pitching used to be.
Yes.
It is. It's the gold. It's the gold standard for baseball.
Mm-hmm. That's
for
right.
pitching right now.
You're right.
And
I was a Tampa Bay Ray in AAA.
You contributed to it.
Yeah.
You were part of the cachet.
Did you come up with what, Hellickson, Matt Moore, those guys?
No, I was with Matt Moore.
He was a phenom. He's still a phenom.
It was just like, I mean, we just kind of giggled as he went out and manhandled the other team every time.
It just looks so easy coming out of his hand. He's throwing like 96.
Easy,
and he's a
96.
Lefty. And he's not that big.
No.
It's crazy.
And he's got back knee. I'm just throwing that out there.
That's
I'm
the worst portmanteau in the history of Western civilization.
But we have learned something today on the show about catchers and acne.
Oh, yeah, glad you did. How does no one ever put that together? Does no one say?
Because they're not insiders. Yeah. And I think that a lot of players don't think to share that kind of insight because they don't think it's going to enter into the lexicon. But it's interesting. I think most players would be like, he's scrappy, he gives 110%. But I mean, an ex-player who doesn't speak in platitudes is like a sighting. It's like Haley's Comet.
we got to scoot. Jonah, thanks so much for doing this. Jonah Carey from Grantland.com. Sweeney Murdy from WFAN will join us a little more, talk about Alex Rodriguez. And we are waiting, Travis, a special guest appearance by a member of the Blue Jays front office.
Ooh.
And we're not telling anybody who it is. You'll have to hang around. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.